Welcome to the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast here on the Backbreaker Media Network. And now, your host, Big Bad Boris.
It is time for yet another episode of the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast. My name is Big Bad Boris, and another special guest. I'm on location. On location in the palatial estate of referee extraordinaire Michael the Fitz Fitzpatrick. Mr. Fitzpatrick, how the hell are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. We're sitting in your nice air-conditioned living room. The original plan, we were going to sit out on the deck and do this, but that is the worst idea known to man.
It's like hotter than Satan's taint out there.
Hotter than Satan's taint. We're off and running.
Yes, we are.
Thank you for having me over to your home. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Anytime. Not just to do a podcast either. You can come over anytime.
This place is pretty happening.
The other thing we should warn the viewers is sometimes I have a potty mouth. So
that's okay. I tend to drop the F-bomb pretty liberally myself.
Perfect. I just want the warning out there.
All right. Now, a lot of people who know you... No, you're having a Bud Light. What's the verdict on the Bud Light Apple, by the way?
It's good.
It's good?
It's refreshing on a hot day.
It gives you the thumbs up?
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people that know you know about your previous life slash career as an Elvis impersonator to a somewhat critical acclaim.
Yes.
Now, I know this, and a lot of people know this, but I know nothing about the backstory of how this came to be. So we're going to get to the pile driver part later. We're going to start with the punk part now, a.k.a. the music part.
Okay, that's true.
Pardon me. How does one become an Elvis impersonator, and how does one become one of critical acclaim?
Well, so what happened was I used to volunteer for these car shows. I was like a 17-year-old kid, and I volunteered for these this old couple that would run charity car shows. And... what happened was I was counting ballots near the stage, and there was an Elvis on the stage and an Elvis waiting to go on the stage. And I was singing along with the Elvis on stage.
Okay.
And the Elvis waiting to go on stage heard me and said that I should probably think about being, if I ever thought about being an Elvis impersonator.
Now, where does your love of Elvis come from?
Probably growing up listening to it.
Was it like your parents listened to Elvis?
My aunt.
Okay.
I was a huge Elvis fan. And in fact, the first time I think I realized maybe I sounded a little bit like him when I sung was I was probably 15 at the kitchen table when my aunt was playing Elvis, and I started singing along with it.
Okay.
And my mother and my aunt just kind of stopped and started staring at each other. And I thought I did something wrong at first, but apparently I just sounded a lot like Elvis.
So you're at a car show and you were discovered, like Pamela Anderson was discovered at BC Place Stadium,
I guess.
So said similar but different. So this dude said, hey, have you ever thought about doing this?
Yeah. And then he gave me I was like, nah, I don't think I'm that good. And then I went to his house for an audition, and he's like, it's a little
rough. All right, wait, hold up a second here. You went to his house for an audition.
Yeah,
Were you worried that this was going to be a situation where, you know, have a seat on here and let me rub your thigh kind
of
thing?
No. I took my really big friend.
Oh, okay. So you didn't
just go. In case I had backup.
You didn't go alone.
Right.
Okay.
Safety first.
Of course. That's wise.
So I did I pretty much sang in this guy's living room. And he was like, yeah, I'd like to work with you and then get you performing and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, cool. So the first time he put me on stage though, it was a disaster. I was scared like nobody's business, shaking, and it was horrible. Like nothing near what I sounded like in that.
Did you dress the part, or was it just,
I was young Elvis. So
okay.
It was pretty easy. It was always like flashy blazer and, you know, the black drain pipe pants and whatever 50s looking shoes. I had black and white, saddle shoes, they call them.
Now, no disrespect intended, but I noticed there's not a lot on the roof. Did you have hair back then?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm going to tell you right now, I attribute my hair loss to being an Elvis impersonator.
Really? Okay.
You know how much stuff you have to put in your head to make a stand? Because
there's another gentleman that I know that's a friend of Annie's that you probably know as well, and his name is escaping me, right? Robin Kelly.
Robin.
And he always wears a ball cap. And I was under the impression, I thought I heard him say something about how he always wears the ball cap to like keep control and take care of the hair. Is that true, or am I misunderstanding?
You know what? I used to wear a ball cap too when I was Elvis, but the reason I did is because, man, you just don't want to do your hair like that every day. And okay. It takes time. Like,
and you probably had to, you're naturally blonde, I assume, right?
Yes.
So you had to dye it a lot as well?
I didn't dye it once, because Elvis's natural hair color is actually like a light brown.
I didn't know that until recently.
So when he didn't start really dyeing it until he started doing movies.
And
he dyed it with black shoe polish to look more like Tony Curtis, because he thought Tony Curtis looked really cool.
Oh, see, we're learning. We're learning about the
yeah,
king.
Yeah, man.
So first show, nervous.
Oh, it was terrible. It was at the Strathcona Legion, the one on right behind White Ave there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was there, and it was horrible. I was scared, like shaking, like legitimately shaking. Like I couldn't stop shaking. I was that nervous.
Now, is this like a wrestling show where there's like an opening Elvis and then you work up to the main event Elvis? Like there's a series of Elvi?
Yeah, usually. So
were you like the curtain jerker Elvis?
I was always the curtain jerker. It was great. I had a 20-minute set.
Did you ever main event Elvis?
You know what? Sometimes I ended up being the main event Elvis because the All other right. two that hired me weren't as entertaining, I
guess.
Oh,
so you usurped, the student became the teacher,
yeah,
so
I didn't
speak.
Mean to, but...
Hey, the cream rises to
but
the top.
Here's the thing is it was actually, when I first started, it was me and Robin Kelly's older brother, Darren Lee.
Oh, okay.
We were the only two young Elvises at that time.
Why do you think everybody gravitates towards old, and I don't mean that disrespectfully because I know you're a big Elvis fan, but old jumpsuit Elvis? Is it just easier? Is it?
I think it's the songs.
Oh, okay.
I think the songs are more relatable in that, to especially the older you get. It's kind of like, because you got to remember, Elvis fans kind of maybe grew with him and grew older with him.
Okay.
So their tastes became his tastes. So the older he got, He started to do more like contemporary stuff, more love, you know, more operatic stuff, because his voice was so powerful in some of the songs you can hear. So I think that's one of the biggest reasons okay. that people tend to gravitate.
Did you ever do old Elvis or later Elvis?
No.
I should say no, always
no,
young.
No, I was always young Elvis. I was like 18 when I did it though, so there's no way I'd pass for it.
When was the last time you had? How old are you now? I know that's not polite to ask a gentleman.
I am 42.
Yeah, actually, you're pretty close to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually the age that Elvis died at right now.
Oh. So when was the last time you had a gig? It's been quite a while, right?
Yeah, I came back and did they call it the Blue Suede Music Festival. And I don't think it's happening because of COVID, but there's a wonderful lady named Trudy Taphorn, and she does it every year. I think it's like a big
Is
deal.
It in BC or am I thinking
No,
of
it's
something
it's
else?
Here in Alberta. It's in park where you can go park a trailer camp for the weekend, and it's just a whole bunch of different impersonators that show up that she gets to show
okay.
up, and
cool.
they just take turns performing on stage. I did that for her. Like, she just called me out of the blue. Actually, I think she got my number from the old Elvis fan club president, because I was like, that's not a phone call I had in a few years.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah.
like in 2012, I think, was the
oh,
last
so
time.
It's been a while.
Kurt, I was actually there.
Oh, okay,
I
did he give
Kurt
you...
might have a video somewhere.
Ooh, now we're cooking. All
I
right.
did. I did it bald though.
I keep thinking, because have you listened to the podcasts?
I have
all of them.
Not all of them yet,
but every episode there seems to be something to do with a video, like something talking about a wrestling match or whatever. I've been debating adding like a video not like filming us sitting here
right.
talking, because that's boring, but a video component where we talked about your appearance as Elvis here. Now you can watch it. Or MRB and I talked about that 60 minute Ironman match with BVD. Well, here's, you know,
a
4 minute clip video.
That's a good
idea. I thought that'd be kind of like a companion
that's a
thing.
Idea.
So first show was disastrous, but obviously you stuck with it and you built up. How did you get more comfortable?
Just by doing
just reps?
Yeah. No, you know what it was? So there's this other guy that I met. He was an older Elvis. He was actually an ex-karate guy.
Elvis was a karate guy, wasn't he?
He was. This guy was a competition karate guy.
Oh, okay.
Mitch. I forget his last name. But anyway, I'd go to his garage where he had like a whole system set up. And it was kind of like a karaoke style, but it was actually Elvis impersonator tracks, like professional tracks that people would use, so it sounded pretty close to the recorded version
of the
songs.
Okay, not like karaoke stuff, right, but like the real deal?
Right.
Okay.
And so I just spent like a month in this guy's garage with him, and all we would do was sit there and we'd talk about Elvis, and we'd talk wrestling, because he was a little bit of a wrestling fan, okay, actually. And then we just pick songs, and he'd help me find my range, and then pick songs that I was really, really good at, and then songs that I was okay at and got better at, and okay, that's how we built my set. I had like two sets I would use.
Was there stuff that you tried and you just couldn't do it and you dropped?
Yeah, and it was Hound Dog. I've never seen
really?
Hound Dog.
But that's like a staple.
Yeah, but it's so
Is it the gravelly, graspy part?
Yeah.
Yeah?
When I would do it, it just sounded nothing like Elvis, and I didn't look anything like Elvis, so at least needed to sound like him.
All right, now, honestly, give me an honest answer here. Do you have the moves? Did you have the moves? Did you have the hips and all that shit?
Of course. That's probably why I have bad hips now. Yeah. That was probably one of my most...
So between Elvis and jumping up and down on the mat for 20 years?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's definitely... I got terrible hips. Like 3 hours to Calgary and I'm just about ready to tap out by the time I get there. But definitely had the moves. That was one of the things, is sitting there in front of a mirror with a mic stand. And I'd sing along. I'd put like actual Elvis in and sing with that, because mm-hmm. it helps your ear.
You just
ear.
Study tapes and like
yeah, oh yeah,
freeze
tons
frame
of footage
and stuff.
And I'm gonna tell you some. Elvis fans are crazier than wrestling fans, because
that can't be possible.
I know more about Elvis than I possibly should, because if they ask you a question, they know the answer already. But if you
and
don't
they
get
will
it
correct
right,
you. If you
oh, they will give you a lecture.
Ooh, okay,
man, they're fanatical and they take it pretty seriously too. Like it's. You're almost like disrespecting them if you don't know, but you're up there performing.
Yeah. You know. So is there competitions?
Yes.
Because I understand you won. Am I misinformed?
I've never won a competition.
Did you compete, though?
I did compete.
Did you do well?
I came in second. I actually beat Robin Kelly.
Ooh.
I don't
there's
know
There's fighting
how.
Words there.
I don't, you know what it was? It's because Robin Kelly and I, it's when he like first started.
Like I've seen, and like again, I'm not an Elvis aficionado. I don't know a lot about him. No disrespect intended, but I've gone to see Robin Kelly with Andy a couple times and I was entertained. I thought he was great.
Robin Kelly's great. I love Robin Kelly. It was like when he first started. It was very close to the beginning of his career. And I think the mistake that, well, I didn't even want to enter. I just was talked into it because they were short. Elvis's
Elvi,
yeah,
is that the plural of Elvis?
Elvis, whatever. And I just so I was like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't mean nothing to me. I wasn't there to actually win. Until the only time I think I got competitive during the whole thing was the old Elvises in the jumpsuit were cheating and they're handing out scarves. So
okay, how is that cheating? Is it because they're having physical interaction with the audience?
Well,
kind of
it's kind of like you got to work the audience, right? Mm-hmm. But they're like they're not really working the. That's kind of cheap when you're giving them free stuff.
It's,
of course,
it's cheap heat.
Yeah.
It okay. Is cheap all right. Heat. All right. Okay.
So I was like, you know,
this is the worst town I've ever been to.
And being Elvis, being young Elvis, we didn't hand anything out. We didn't throw anything out. So I was like,
the girls handed stuff to you.
Usually their lips, but
ooh,
well, kissed. Like I used to make that joke all the time where I'd kiss some guy's wife and they look at him and be like, it's a tough job, man. Somebody's got to do it. And then shake
Smooth.
His hand, of course.
Smooth.
But so yeah, they're throwing away scarves and you know, getting a reaction. I was like, you know what? Screw this. I did like almost I basically an Elvis strip tease that threw away my tie.
Nice.
And what about Ivan would have appreciated it? Because I believe it was a pink tie.
There you go. Is there money to be made? Like, I'm sure you weren't getting rich or anything, but it helped. Did it put a few bucks in the bank? Not lots.
I made $200 every time I stepped on stage for 20 minutes.
That's not bad for 20 minutes work.
And that was like the mid-90s, or Ooh. Like 97, 98.
Okay.
So, yeah, not bad. And because I was young Elvis, I worked with everybody.
Okay.
So I always had bookings.
Mm-hmm.
Like just about every weekend, I think I was booked.
Look at this guy. Now, here's the $64 million question. Did Michael Fitz Elvis get laid from being an Elvis impersonator? And I know that's not a classy question, but come on, the people want to know. And judging by that look on your face, now you're not looking me in the eye right now. I think I know the answer.
I had a girlfriend at the time.
Oh, okay.
And the demographic that I was performing for was probably old enough to be my mother or grandmother at the time.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to tell you something, though. Here's a funny story. Is I would go out on stage.
All right. I like stories. This is what we're here for.
And women have no boundaries.
Like, really?
Oh, man. They grab at stuff. And I'm like an 18, 19-year-old kid, and they're grabbing at stuff that they should not
be. Stuff?
Yeah.
Oh.
Shoving phone numbers in my pockets.
Really?
All the old Elvises loved me because I come back and I just, like, empty my pockets with phone numbers. I'd be like, there you go, boys. I'd come off stage and they'd be like, how many did you get this time? It was, they loved it.
Any other cool stories? Regarding this?
You know what?
Because I always knew you did this, but I didn't know anything about it.
You know the song Return to Sender?
Yeah.
I actually sang Return to Sender with Stormin' Norman Burgess on saxophone, who actually played the saxophone on the track for Elvis.
I thought you were going to say Norman Schwarzkopf for a second. I'm like, cool.
No. Stormin' Norman Burgess.
Where did this happen?
I believe it was the classiest joint of all, the Drake on 118th Avenue Beverly.
What was he doing there?
They hired him.
Really?
Yeah, he was with a band and everything, and actually sang Return to Sender with Stormin' Norman Burgess, who played it on his saxophone.
Is there a video of that?
I don't believe so.
Oh, that's
I don't even think I was in costume. Like, I think it was just, I'm like, I know who that guy is. And I was like, hey, man, can I sing? I'm an Elvis. And he's like, yeah, man, no problem. And we sang Return to Sender. So
that's
the
cool.
Crowd got a treat that night.
That's a cool story. Okay, so we're going to go to your first track, which, shockingly enough, is an Elvis song. Why? What song is this? Why'd you pick it? Tell me all about it.
I chose If I Can Dream. And the biggest reason I chose this song is with all the stuff coming to light these days, I thought that this song probably, it amazed me at how this song probably was more relevant today than maybe even in 68 when it was pretty relative. And so if you like listen to the words of this song, it's so relative to today and today's society. And the other part is I want everybody to YouTube the 68 Comeback Special.
I was going to ask you about that, because when I was pulling this track, I saw the regular version and the 68 Comeback Special version. Can I ask a stupid question?
There's no such thing.
Okay. What were we coming back from?
What do you mean?
The 68 Comeback Special.
Oh,
he hadn't performed
in front of a live audience in like 10 years. He was doing movies for 10 years straight.
Oh.
So the decade of the 1960s, basically, from the time he got out of the Army till that 68 Comeback Special, he did 32 movies and that's it. Never one
32 live, movies?
Never one live performance, yeah.
I watched Clambake. That's good shit.
You
that
like,
confident song?
Oh,
that's my jam.
That's my fault. And was it What About Ivan?
I think it was, actually. Because it might have been him or it might have been Andy. I can't remember.
Because
somebody,
I told What About Ivan about confidence. And as soon as I told him this story, he's like, I got to see this.
Yeah,
and then I think he owns the movie.
Yeah, it's legendary. Okay, so we're going to go to, what's this one again? If I Can Dream.
If I Can Dream. And everybody needs to like YouTube the performance, because it's probably one of the greatest live performances ever.
All right, here comes the king on the Triple P.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Must be peace and understanding sometime. Strong winds of promise that will blow away the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining on everyone, tell me why. Appear. we're lost in a cloud with too much rain. We're trapped in a world that's troubled with pain. But as long as a man has the strength to dream, he can redeem. A trembling question. Still, I am sure that the answer's gonna come somehow. Out there in the dark, there's a beckoning candle. Yeah. And while I can think, while I can talk, while I can stand, while I can walk, while I can dream.
Elvis Presley, If I Can Dream, on the Punk and Podrivers podcast, joined by Michael Fitzpatrick, referee to the stars in his humble abode. Now, let's get to the other part of the P&P, which is the Podrivers part, which is the wrestling part. You have been in the wrestling business for, I would assume, like I've been with PWA for, I'm coming up on 20 years because I wasn't there right at the beginning, but you've probably been there over 20 years now, right?
21 years.
21 now. Years. How did you get involved in the wrestling business, and why a referee?
All right, so
was it something you wanted to do, or was being a referee thrust upon you?
I was so good at being a referee that it was just hard to not be a referee anymore. I think that was the biggest thing there. How I got into it was me and my buddy would go to this coffee shop all the time.
Is this the same guy who accompanied you to your creepy Elvis tryout?
No. No, different buddy. All but right. We go to this coffee shop all the time where Kurt and Tex Gaines would go all the time. And we knew the girls really well at the coffee shop, and they told us that Kurt and Ivan were in the wrestling business. And my buddy and I were like, yeah, okay, whatever. But we started talking to them anyway, and then they started telling us that they had a school and la-di-da-di-da. So that's how it kind of started, is just the relationship right there, having coffee with Kurt and Ivan, meeting them in a coffee shop, and then training for a bit. And then my first show was at Festival Place in Sherwood Park. Mm-hmm. And I think I got, like, because I watched wrestling all my life, so I kind of got the gist of what a referee did. And then Tex gave me maybe 15-minute little training
little
session.
Yeah.
And then it was showtime, and I'm standing there in a hockey jersey, referee jersey. And Kurt,
black and white stripes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kurt looked at me. I wore that for the first probably.
I have old pictures of you in
there. Yeah.
I might dig one up for the social posts.
Kurt looks at me. He's like, Pat, you're Irish, right? I'm like, yeah. It's like, you're Michael Fitzpatrick. Go get him, kid. That was it.
And the rest was history.
The rest is history.
What was the first match that you reffed?
You know what? I don't remember.
Oh, no. I want to know if it was.
I remember certain things. I remember my first bump I ever took
was
given to me by the great Dirty Duke Durango.
God bless Dirty Duke Durango. I love that guy.
The old squish in the corner.
Okay. Did he ease up on you, or did he give it to you?
Oh, no. It was perfect.
Okay.
He was a pro. He was also one of the first guys that pulled me aside and told me how important a referee is in a match.
We're
going
to get to that, actually, in a minute.
So that was my first bump. I honestly don't remember the first match I reffed. I don't even know if it was the first show, but I remember things like refereeing. You remember Tennille Siren?
Mm-hmm.
I remember refereeing her. Or no, she got bumped because I don't even think she wrestled.
She might have been
a valet. Mm-hmm. And I thought she actually got hurt.
Oh, like she was.
But she just sold really well.
Okay. I was wondering whatever happened to her.
I'm not sure either. I don't know. I was friends with her on Facebook for a little bit, but then she just kind of...
Yeah, she was cool. Referees, I've always thought, super, super, super important. And I believe you can tell a really good referee by the fact that you never notice them until you're supposed to notice them.
That's it, right there.
And I've always thought, like, I had a respect for referees, and even more so after my match with Andy. And I've talked about this with other people about you, because you were instrumental in A, checking to make sure I was okay, and like telling me to sell to the crowd. You just kept tabs on me to make sure that everything was going well, and then helping me get through the goddamn finish because I couldn't hear him yell scissors 100 times.
You know, I knew you were nervous.
Oh, so, God, you have no idea.
So I thought maybe me reminding you of that stuff would have helped you feel more comfortable in doing what you were doing in there. And I knew what was going down. Andy told me what was going down.
He's still a bastard for that.
I thought it was good. And you know what? I think it was better because your reaction was so much better, because you didn't know it was coming. So it was more of a natural reaction, and I think that's where he wanted to do it.
Yeah, and if you go back and you watch, once I realized, when I finally got the scissors, I realized, okay, he changed it. If you go back, and as soon as the arm comes down, I let go of him, and I just lay on my back, and for like 2 or 3 seconds, I just kind of soaked it in for a second. I was like, okay, I got through it. I didn't fuck up. Everything's good. And then I had the fun thing, but yeah. But I remember you checking to make sure I was okay and all that stuff. What's the worst bump you've ever taken? Have you ever got hurt?
Not hurt. You know what? One time, it was with Gamma Singh Jr. and El Reverso.
I often wonder whatever happened to El Reverso, too.
I'm
Gamma
friends
Jr.,
with him
great
on
guy
Facebook.
Too.
But what happened was it was supposed to be El Reverso did this kind of weird spinning kick, kind of like the Kofi kick where he does that spinning weird kick, and then it was supposed to happen in the corner, and Junior was supposed to pull me in front, and of course I was supposed to get kicked to bump me instead. Typical heel shit, chicken shit heel stuff. And so it would have been fine, except the timing was a little bit off, and Reverso's foot kept coming, and Gamma kept pulling, so I got pulled right into a kick in the side.
Oh, rung your
of
bell
head.
A little bit?
Oh, definitely rung my bell. I remember because I took the bump, and then I kind of sat up for, like, I took a belly bump, and then kind of got up for a second to make sure all my teeth were still in my mouth, because that's my worst fear in a wrestling match. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all my teeth are there, and then I just did what I had to do and
all
played dead for a little bit. And collected my thoughts properly. But it definitely rang my
bell. Yeah, for sure. Have you ever fucked up? Did you ever fuck up real bad?
Yep.
Tell me. I want to hear the story. Because I don't know of any time of you that I've ever seen of you. Like, you're always stellar.
It was kind of an on-purpose thing.
Uh-oh.
And I was trying to save Sarge and with Chip Worthington or Sky.
Chip Worthington, yep.
So... Duke,
that's a name from the past.
Yeah,
Holy shit.
Duke, who is booking, says, go out there and give me a Broadway. And they're like, okay. They didn't know what a Broadway was.
Oh, fuck.
So,
for those who don't know, a Broadway is a time limit draw.
Time limit draw. So,
wrestling lingo.
I knew what a Broadway was.
Okay.
So Sarge gives him like the sit out powerbomb gimmick. And I'm like, guys, it's a Broadway. And I'm counting
one.
Oh,
those poor bastards.
Two.
Oh.
And I'm like, it's a Broadway on my hands coming down. And I notice he's not going to kick out. So I just kind of did the sweep. And I was like, two.
See, but the thing is, you look like a shithead then. And that sucks.
Right. And I'd rather me look like the shithead.
Fair.
But then Sarge looks at me. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's a Broadway. And he's like, oh. Goes back. Sit out powerbomb. This time I count three and I walk to the back and Duke's like, what the fuck was that? I was like, apparently they don't know what a Broadway is.
Oh, that's a good story. I like that. Now, one of my favorite memories of yours that is, it's recent. I want to say it was the last year's New Year's Rumble.
Okay.
Is that the one you were in or was it 2019 you were in? I can't remember.
I think it might have been 2019.
I laughed so hard because you went in there and you whipped your shirt off and you kicked some ass.
Well,
I had no idea.
I mean, let's give thanks to Michael and Cody because they made me look like $1 million too. Like, I trained. I didn't finish.
See, that's
training.
What I was going to ask you is how much training did you do? Because I did very, very, very little.
I
very little.
I did quite extensive training. I never totally finished training, but I mean, I know how to bump and I get enough to know how to do a lot of what goes on. That's why I was so instrumental and able to help you, is because I know you sell to the ropes as a baby face. You always sell to the ropes, sell to the crowd, get that sympathy.
And yeah, I was looking at people in the front row like I was dying.
Right, absolutely. That's exactly what you need to do. So I get all that stuff. And then being around, like I've had the privilege and the front row seat to some of the greatest performers wrestling has ever seen for the last 21 years.
Yeah.
And that goes all the way back to like Dirty Duke Durango himself and TJ Wilson and Harry Smith and, you know, and then in there with guys like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and just listening and learning from those guys too, just being a little, and that's the biggest thing, it's just sitting in a corner shutting my mouth and listening.
Oh yeah. And especially when those guys are around, you only have them for a few hours, you take advantage of that and you soak it all in. What did you did a stunner and some other stuff? What, I can't
remember. Stunner, I think I rock bottom Cody. Stunned Michael, game of suplex too, some arm drags, Ricky Steamboat style arm drags. That's Ennis says I can arm drag like Ricky Steamboat. Yeah. I think it's all Michael because that guy could go in there and have a match with a broomstick and it would be WrestleMania worthy. But it was definitely like.
So why did you never become a worker?
I honestly think because very early on I was always told that I was a good referee and I didn't know if like they were ribbing me or. And I was like, okay. But guys, I think I started to believe it when guys like Johnny Devine would be like, Pat, you're reffing my match because you're the best. Next to Oscar, a Stampede referee.
Oscar Wilde?
Yeah, maybe.
I think that was the
name. And apparently I was like Devine's favorite referee next to Oscar Wilde at the time. I was like, well, that's got to be a compliment because if Devine doesn't like you, he's not going to pretend
to. Yeah, he doesn't pull punches either, that guy.
And and then guys like Durango and all. I remember we had one other referee come in one time. It was like a bald older guy. Apparently he used to ref back in the day, but apparently he was terrible.
When was this? Was this before me?
It might have been.
I don't remember.
Because he did a whole Bima thing and he pissed off.
Yeah, I wasn't on any of the Bima shows.
He did a whole Bima show, and it was like a roll-up or something, and Duke said it took him like 10 minutes to count the three.
If you watch Lucha, you see some of these old Lucha refs are like that. It's like...
And Duke was pissed. And then we did a Nate show, because that's when Nate was our regular venue. And I remember standing at the curtain next to Duke, and I couldn't even see what was going on because I was just waiting to go out and ref the next match. And Duke just turned to me. He's like... You tell Kurt that guy's done tonight. You're doing the rest of the fucking night. It's like, okay, Duke. Done deal, man.
Did any of the younger refs that we use come to you, like Richie, who come to you for advice?
I taught Richie like just the basic stuff, and Richie was just smart enough to get it too, like he knew. And then, most of the younger refs that worked with us that spent any amount of time, I would always give them little things here and there to do.
So you said you grew up watching wrestling.
Oh, yeah, man. Since I was like two. Started with my grandfather. His idea of babysitting was me on his lap, Stampede Wrestling on TV, and a case of beer next to his. That was Saturday afternoons, man.
I'll babysit you right now.
Kind of are.
Who were some of your favorites back in the day?
You know what?
I was a big Hogan kid. I think everybody our age kind of was. I had the Hogan workout set.
I will never forget the first time I saw Hulk Hogan. It was, it was probably actually Rocky III, but I didn't realize who he was. But then I remember he press slammed some dude. I don't remember who. It had to have been like a Saturday Night's Main Event too. He press slammed somebody and then did the peck dance.
Okay.
And I'll never forget that in my entire life. I'm like, that's awesome.
So you don't watch a lot of what's going on now, though.
No,
that's one of the things that I talked about with, I think, with Taryn and a couple of other guys, is there's two kinds of people that I've noticed that in our my little corner of the wrestling business. There's people like me who are insanely obsessed and watch tons of shit. MRB is pretty similar, and then there's other people who watch nothing. And I don't understand how you can be a professional wrestler and not watch wrestling.
I like
watching, but that's just me, you know.
I like watching older stuff, and I have my favorites that I'll watch, like Eddie Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't think I'd ever get sick of watching Eddie Guerrero wrestle. I love Dean Malenko. I'm a huge Dean Malenko guy. I could watch that guy wrestle. He was just poetry in motion. I love watching TJ. I don't think I've ever seen a more flawless wrestler than TJ.
Just smooth as silk. Every
yeah, day. And I'm not even like kissing his ass. Like he's always like, if TJ ever made a mistake, you'd never know it.
Oh yeah.
In fact, I felt bad because I think I was one of the noticeable things he ever did is I got close and he used my shoulder to do that backflip. You know how they grab the back rope sometimes to get out of the armor and stuff? Yeah. He used my shoulder to try and do it once and my jersey slipped.
Oh, no.
I felt so terrible.
Oh, really? You can't control that stuff, though.
Yeah, and Macho Man. I always forget how good he is until I watch him. And I'm like, man. And of course, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, all those like 80s stuff I could watch forever. Roddy Piper. I'm a huge Roddy Piper fan.
So
I
there's nothing new that catches your eye.
Nowadays, if The Rock comes back, maybe, because he's just simply entertaining and I'm a huge Rock fan.
So I could name a bunch of indie guys and you'd have no idea who the fuck I was
talking about. Maybe some of them. Some of the guys we've had.
But if I say Lee Moriarty, you have no idea who
I have no clue, man.
All right, that's fair enough. Let's go to your second track, and then I want to talk about your driving days. Because you are the unofficial, official PWA chauffeur. Yes. And I want to know if there's any fun stories. Let's go to your second track.
It's called Wolf Totem by The Who.
The Who, H-U, right?
H-U, yeah.
Tell me about this band, because I know nothing about this band.
I don't know nothing about this band either. So
just the track caught your
eye? Just the track caught my eye.
Okay.
And it's my favorite workout song right now. So that's pretty much why I picked it. And the other reason I picked it is just to show how broad my music spectrum really is. All the way from Elvis to something like this Wolf Totem.
Because a lot of people are like, oh, do I have to pick punk songs if I come on? No, you can pick whatever you want. That's just what I like, so that's what I play. But
I like punk too. I mean, I got
to... And what I think is really cool, you told me that there's been a few songs that we've played that you've downloaded.
Yes.
And to me, I think that's super awesome.
Yes. I think both the ones that MRB picked... the title holder song
and that Interrupter song that he got that band for me, but whatever.
But it's a great song.
So this is Wolf Totem by The Who, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about you behind the wheel.
Till the bloody end.
Wolf Totem, that is the Who, H-U, on the Punk and Pod Drivers podcast, joined by Michael Fitzpatrick, the referee of the Stars. What was your favorite match? That's like a very obvious question. Your favorite match you've reffed?
Ooh, man.
Because you've been in there with some, like,
yeah,
some big names.
I don't know if I could pick
the
just
Joes
one.
And the Daniels and the AJ Styles and
I don't know
Jay Lethal and Christian and blah blah blah.
I don't know if I could pick just one because there's so many that are kind of special to me. One of the ones that stands out to me right off the bat is MRB versus Christopher Daniels in Calgary.
Okay.
And that's because MRD basically wrestled that match with one arm.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that when he was on because he had just
so good
fucked up his pec.
So good.
And the funny story about that is that was the show where we had the one broken board of the ring.
That's where they built they built the handicap ring.
Oh, that's a good story.
At the casino.
Yes, we used to store we used to run at, I'm just talking for people, because
yeah, yeah.
I have a lot of friends and people who are not necessarily wrestling fans. We used to run at the Century Casino in Calgary, which is the old Frank Sisson Silver Dollar Action Center. And we used to store our ring at a little building across the street. They took pieces of our ring and built a handicap ramp, and we showed up for a big show with Christopher Daniels, and pieces of the fucking ring were missing.
Yeah, and Michael's dad had to go and build us a floor of the ring, basically.
And yeah, and he was like running around yelling at people, like, let's go, my boy's wrestling Christopher Daniels. That's a good story.
Christopher Daniels popped. He loved that. He thought it was the greatest.
He's a
thing
good guy
ever.
Too.
He's so awesome.
I like that
That's
we brought
one of
him
my
in.
Favorite guys.
Yeah, I like that we brought him in a bunch of times. Always been super cool. Everyone that I've come across, and there's been a few that I've missed over the years that I heard weren't so super cool. Like I missed Raven, and I don't remember him.
I didn't drive Raven.
I don't remember
any of the driving.
But just like most of my interactions backstage with all of our like the bigger names we brought in has been pretty overwhelmingly positive for me anyway.
For me,
Bubba
too.
Ray was a bit of a, you know.
You know what? I liked the Dudley Boys. Bubba Ray and D-Von were over.
I remember D-Von being cool. I remember Bubba Ray at the basement of Nate asked, what about Ivan if he was bisexual? And that sticks in my head for years and years and years. I don't know why. But so you would always go and pick up these talents from the airport because you had a Cadillac. Is that what it is? Or was it because the Cadillac had more room for people? Or did you even have a Cadillac, or am I revising history?
No, because when I first started doing it, I had a Sunfire.
So did you have a Cadillac at one point?
I borrowed my dad's Cadillac.
Ah, so there is a Cadillac, and I'm not telling tales out of school.
It's because I had an SUV at the time.
Ah, okay.
And I borrowed the dad's Cadillac to pick up the Iron Sheik because he's in a wheelchair, and I didn't think he would be able to get
And
because
he's the fucking Iron Sheik.
And because he's the Iron Sheik.
He was all alone in that little side room that Kurt used to use as his. He was sitting in there all by himself. And I made sure on the way to the venue in Calgary, I stopped at the liquor store and got beers. And he was all by himself. And I walked in with a beer, because I know he, you know, Iron Sheik likes cold beer.
Oh, yeah.
I made sure to wait till he's by himself. And I walked in and I said, "Here you go, sir." He took the beer. He looked at me. He said, "God bless you, Bubba." And I had, that was my little moment that I had with Sheik. And then I walked away and I was like, that's what I wanted. I got my little quick little moment.
He was great. He was awesome.
And Bushwhacker Luke was super cool, too.
Yeah, the funny story about Bushwhacker Luke.
Here we go. This is what I want.
So I took him to, he loves Swiss Chalet.
Really?
He's like, "You know that chicken joint?" And like, I couldn't.
Is that Canadian only?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he loves Swiss Chalet. So after I figured out it was Swiss Chalet, he wanted to go to,
Swiss Chalet.
And then I think we went and picked up Andy. And he told me on the way to pick up Andy, because we all drove to Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went to pick up Andy. And on the way to pick up Andy, he's like, "I'm probably going to nap while we're driving to Calgary." I'm like, "Hey, man, do whatever you need to do in the back. It's cool." And I think he talked to us the entire...
I think I heard this story.
The entire 3 hours.
Yeah.
He did not nap.
Yeah.
And just talked. And I was like, I thought he was going to nap. He just talked. It was fine because it made the drive go fast. And the stuff that man remembers, like he remembered the last time he wrestled in Red Deer in 1967 when him and Butch wrestled these guys and they were the sheep herders and Stampede.
And he gave me his phone number. And I don't know why. I can't remember what it was, why he gave me his phone number. But I got a little bit of FaceTime with him because he's friends with Andy. So if we ever play the who's the most famous person in your phone game, I got a little bit of clout with it. Says Bushwhacker Luke in my phone. But yeah, he was super, super cool. I bought him chicken nuggets. That's the other thing. I drove him from Red Deer. I think it was...
Yeah, because I had the Sheik. I had to leave early with the Sheik.
Yeah, so we stopped at Wendy's after. I think it was the Red Deer show. And
because we did three.
Yeah, I named it the Legends Tour when I made the posters because I thought I was cool. Anyway, we stopped at Wendy's and we all made our orders and Andy goes to pull out money and I'm like, "I'm buying Lucas nuggets." I took him, gave him back his money, and I tell everybody that I bought Bushwhacker. Because I'm not going to lie, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm a big fucking mark. I will always be a fan. When this becomes work and not fun anymore,
right,
that's when I don't do it anymore. And there was a time when it did, and I stepped away and I realized after 2 months that it's in my blood and I'm like, "Kurt, I want to come back." Right. It's a part of who I am, you know?
I get it.
Wrestling fucking steals your soul.
Well, I'm going to tell you something too, that, you know, it's sometimes it's not even so much about the wrestling. I mean, it is because I do miss it.
But
it's
us.
The people. Yeah,
yeah.
It's you guys, because you all like have become like a big second family to me. I tell everybody I meet, I'm like, "Well, you got to meet my wrestling family, or I got to go see my wrestling family in Calgary."
Cause like, I may only see you at shows, but I've known you for 20 years almost now.
Right. Right.
And it's cool.
Right. And the great thing is it's like, if, you know, any one of the wrestling guys called me up and said, "Pat, I need this," I'd be there in like 5 seconds.
Like, and it's like Braden was talking about how he was in a stroller at PWA shows, and now he works for us, running a camera. Like, how cool is that?
It's awesome and makes me feel really old.
Fair. Absolutely fair. So is there any other cool stories about you going to the airport and picking up? Do you have a sign at when people come in, like they see on TV that says Christopher Daniels on it?
I don't. And sometimes I get really nervous because I'm like, what if I don't recognize them?
You never know when you just see somebody on TV.
I think
you know?
I was most nervous picking up Abyss because I've never seen him without
a
mask.
Because that was before he did the, I forget the name of the character.
Yeah, without the mask stuff.
He was a super nice dude.
He's a super big
really,
dude.
Really, really nice guy.
And he broke the front seat of my Sunfire trying to move it back. It just tapped out, gave Rick
the really?
Fuck up.
Did he feel bad?
I felt bad because he sat there and stared Highway 2 between his kneecaps.
Oh, no.
And it didn't move. Like, I couldn't even get it fixed. Oh. So the
leading... But I bet he didn't complain, right? Like,
no, he didn't.
Yeah,
he just
guy.
Asked me, "Can I smoke?" I'm like, "Sure." And then leading into that, so I have this Sunfire. It's not a big car.
That's a small
with.
Car,
yeah.
For sure.
And the passenger side seat doesn't move now because Abyss broke it. And so it was the big night of champions. And I'm sitting having breakfast with Al Snow, who's also another one of my
he
favorites.
He was funny. He rode putty like Seabiscuit. It was awesome.
Oh, he's a huge putty fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sitting there having breakfast with Al Snow. We're eating. And Kurt calls me. He's like, "Pat, I can't make it to go pick up Mick Foley. Can you rush to the airport and get him? Like, he should be landing soon." typical PWA wrestling fashion.
It's the way we do business.
Right. So I was like, ugh. I looked at Al. I'm like, I got to go get Mick. You want to come? He's like, nope. I was like, ugh, damn it.
Was that a shoot, though? Like, for real, he didn't want to come?
Yeah. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm going to go for a walk or something. I was like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
Okay. So I rushed to the airport. I'm like maybe 15 minutes late to pick up Mick Foley. Mm-hmm. So, and then I had to find parking. So like 15 minutes. I find Mick Foley in line at the Tim Hortons at the Edmonton International Airport, confused by the loonie and the toonie. And I was like, did you want to get something, Mick? Like, I can wait. Like, no problem. He's like, staring at his palm, confused, looks at me, stares back at his palm.
Is he like, what the fuck is this?
Looks at me and he's like, no, I'm good. And then we went to the car. Also, the only guy I've ever picked up that was also recognized in the airport.
Oh, okay, cool.
None of them have ever been recognized.
Have you ever been recognized?
No.
Really? Never?
In the airport?
No, just in general ever. From wrestling.
Because
it's happened to me a couple of times.
I don't know because
I generally... Like very few and far between, but when it does, I get a little pep in my step, you know?
I don't remember anything. You know what's funny is people have said they've seen me somewhere and called Fitz, but I don't answer to the Fitz unless I'm at a wrestling show.
Okay.
It just doesn't register.
Yeah, fair.
So we get into the car and it's a Sunfire. The front seat doesn't work. So Mick's trying to get into the car he doesn't fit in the front because the seat won't go far enough back. And Mick's body's racked. Like,
yeah, so of course.
I was like, and I was like, you can get into the back. And he got into the back and fit there fine because the seat was far enough
was
up.
He so pissed he had enough. Or was
no,
he
no, he was fine.
Guy?
He's like, and I told him the story. I'm like, Abyss broke my front seat. Like, it hasn't moved up and down since Abyss sat there. He's like, oh, I get it. And he sat in the back. And then, and his luggage rode up front with me. And then I think we talked about everything from living in New York to Elvis, because I had Elvis playing on the stereo.
Oh, okay.
Of course. He's like, is this Elvis? I'm like, yeah, it's Elvis. He's like, well, I haven't heard Elvis in forever. He's so good, isn't he? And we had a whole conversation about Elvis and then what he was doing that night and how nervous he was, because I think that was one of the first times that he did the talk where he just sat and on the stage.
Oh, he was doing like the stand-up sort of thing? Okay.
Yeah, but it was just like an evening with Mick Foley,
like
where he just sat there and told stories.
Yeah.
And I think,
but he could tell a story though, man. Like,
such, you know who other is a great storyteller? I could listen to tell stories forever. Is Bret Hart?
Never met the man.
Oh, I'm telling you. Like,
I was excited when we did the Saddle Dome thing because I thought that we might come down and say hi or whatever. Because I've never, like, born and raised in Calgary. I moved here in '97. I was 21. Like, I lived the first 21 years of my life in Calgary, and I never met Bret.
Whew. I'm telling you, man. If we ever get the chance. The guy can tell.
Maybe Mo could hook me up.
I'm
him
sure
and Mo
he
are
could.
Like buddies.
They're
now.
Like tight. But great storyteller.
Yeah?
I remember because I had the privilege of actually going to Stu's funeral.
Really?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I was in the wrestling business.
I was in the wrestling business.
I got invited.
Too. Okay, that's cool.
I was 2002.
Did you ever work Stampede back in the refing matches for Stampede or anything when they did
their...
No, neither did I. I never did anything.
I was... I probably could have if I would have traveled.
It's a big
I remember I went up
mine.
There with Mark and Leo a couple times, but I never brought my gear, you know.
Hey, that's rule number one.
Wrestling
man.
Rule number one, bring your gear. But I never did because I never expected to. Like, I almost didn't want to. I was more interested in watching the shows back then, too, because it was always like Harry, TJ.
Yeah. APOC and all those.
Yeah, I love APOC. I miss APOC, actually. You know who I realized I missed a lot the other day because I watched Duke's podcast was Dusty.
What a character.
I love that guy.
He likes the podcast, too. He sends me text messages, you know, saying how he likes the podcast. And then I'll get, do you like this band? Just out of the blue, do you like this band? And just he's quite the character, our Dusty.
I love Dusty. I miss Dusty. I hope he comes back.
I think if he stuck with it, he could have got signed, especially now. Like, it's the business has changed so much from even back when he was at his peak compared to now.
Yeah,
in terms of like the look of guys and things like that.
Yeah,
you
don't need
to
be like a monster anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank God. Yeah, but I seriously miss Dusty. In fact, I remember getting Dusty booked one time early on. It was when we brought in, do you remember Veronica Vice?
Mm-hmm.
We brought her in. And I forget, there was a reason her opponent didn't show up or couldn't make it or something.
Oh, okay.
And Kurt's like, oh, what are we going to do? And I remember Dusty was wrestling Natty, and he was the women's champion. Mm-hmm. I was like, why don't you get Dusty to do it in drag or something, or get him to do it?
And he's all in for stuff like that, you know?
And Kurt's like, that's a great idea. He called him, and Dusty got booked. That's like, perfect.
It's funny, because I never get rid of anything like computer files and stuff,
because
I never know who's coming back. So if you look at my list of PWA music, there's like Dusty Angle and Cowboy Dusty and Ultimate Dusty and
was there a DA Punk?
Like there's a, like probably like 10 different Dusty musics. Yeah, great guy. Any other cool stories of chauffeuring?
Well, AJ's been here, what, 3-4 times?
I want to say 4, but it might even be more than that.
So I remember the first time I drove him and Joe, then they came. And just had long talks with them in the car.
Was that the double we did Calgary in here?
Yeah.
That was our first Calgary show, technically?
Yeah, because technically, that's the cool thing, too, is that I guess technically I refereed a pay-per-view match because I wrestled Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles. Was that not a TNA pay-per-view match?
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, that's pretty cool.
Did you do that World of Hurt thing?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
I know What About Ivan did. I should have What About Ivan on. He's probably got some good stories.
Yeah, What About Ivan's probably got some funny stories. And then after that, every time I picked AJ after that, he actually remembered me.
That's cool.
And it was like we were old friends, and I got hugs all the time from AJ. Joe, too. We'd sit there and talk about Joe's kid after a while. He had a child after the feud, because he's in the Hall of Fame, too, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Christopher Daniels.
I wonder if he's got a plaque.
I think he does.
I saw... Mr. Fitzpatrick's plaque hanging in his room, and it made me jealous because I don't have a plaque.
Eighth
inductee. God damn it. Who were the first seven, you know?
I know in my class it was me, Thunder, and Divine.
It's a pretty good class.
That's pretty, respectable class. I don't know who the... Duke, I think, was number one.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And after that, I have no
clue. It was Duke, a whole bunch of guys, then me.
Thunder, Divine, then me.
I was the second. I thought I broke the Hall of Fame because I was the second last inductee. I was the last inductee, or my class was the last inductees for a while before we put Takeshi in. Remember when Takeshi moved back to Japan?
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
I still go and visit Takeshi in Calgary.
Love that guy.
I love that
guy. He'd be a cool guy to have on the podcast.
Very
cool. I wonder if he would be into that.
He would totally be into
it. Yeah, I'm gonna talk. And it gives me an excuse to go to Calgary. I don't like doing it over the phone because it's not as personal. And
Takeshi, would definitely do it. I'd go to Calgary to visit him.
I bet he's got stories.
He's probably got lots, especially Japanese stories.
Yeah, and I love that shit.
Yeah, that would probably be really, why don't you?
Yeah, that's
perfect.
A good call.
And then I go to Calgary to visit, especially through the pandemic. I went a few times to visit Mo and Ennis and Ian, Brody Malibu.
I miss that guy. He's a cool guy.
Love that guy. And Takeshi. And we usually just sit there and have pints and talk.
Beers.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you gave me a quick tour of your humble abode here. And there's lots of comic shit.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. Sorry, shit's a derogatory
That's
term.
Okay.
You're a Batman-Superman guy, right?
I am a everything guy. Okay. But those are the big ones. And Captain America's.
Where did this all come from? From kid fandom as well?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know what? I think, like, the biggest part of it is that I enjoy reading. As you can tell, there's, like, books everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to learn one day.
Everything from, you know, stuff on human behavior stuff to comic books. And I'm a sucker for a good story. Mm. Comic books especially. And then, being a kid. I like being surrounded by things that make me happy and are positive. So that's why I surround myself with, like, Elvis. And then there's Bruce Lee stuff and Seinfeld. And
me.
Irish and Boris on the couch. And
who was the best Joker?
Oh.
Because I thought when I first saw Nicholson when I was a kid, I was like, this movie should be called Joker, not Batman, because he's so fucking good.
Nicholson is probably the best comic book accurate Joker.
And then I saw Heath Ledger one, and I was like, whoa.
That's probably the best realistic Joker.
And I'm not a big like comic book guy by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know nothing about nothing. I didn't see the Suicide Squad or whatever.
Yeah, fun fact is What About Ivan and I?
Because he knows his shit.
Yes, he does. And every Friday, I usually go to What About Stately What About Manor.
Yes, yes, I've been there many times.
Eat Stately What About Manor popcorn because it's amazing. And we watch something nerdy, or he's a real big movie guy,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah. And he's got that big What About Tron
the
or
What About Tron,
it,
yeah. Yeah. So we sit there and we watch nerdy stuff, everything from nerdy stuff to artsy stuff, because he's an artsy movie guy, too. And if I have a question, I just ask him, because sometimes I don't get it. And I'm like, I don't get it, and he'll explain it.
And then the standalone Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix.
I
know it's not really has anything to do with...
I think that was more of a postcard to mental health.
That fucked with my head for a few days, that movie. Kind of stuck with me for a little bit. Yeah. And I don't watch a ton of movies. I'm not really a big movie guy, per se. I listen to a lot of music, and I watch a lot of wrestling. And I have maybe 5 or 6 TV shows I'll just watch over and over again on...
I do that, too.
Yeah, like, I've got a hard drive hooked up to my TV, and I'll watch... MASH, Office, Seinfeld over and over and over and over and over. Or I'll have it in the background while I'm doing other stuff, but I watch a lot of wrestling.
I'm also a huge Big Bang Theory guy.
I started watching that show, but I didn't really stick with it.
I love that show.
Was it good all the way through? Did it fall off? Did it jump the shark, as the kids like to say?
I think they ended it when they needed to end
it.
Yeah? Yeah.
How did it end? Did Leonard and Penny end up together?
Yes.
And did Blossom and what's-his-name end up together?
Yes. And he won a Nobel. They won a Nobel.
Oh,
together,
really?
Actually, yeah.
And nerdy guy and
Howard,
the waitress girl
Howard
with the huge
boobs.
Bernadette. They got married, right?
Yeah, had like 2-3 kids, something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
What about Raj? Whatever his name is.
He just continues to be Raj.
When I used to watch it when it first started, he can only talk to women when he was drunk. Did that stay through the whole series, or was
to? He started to be able to talk to women.
Did he ever have a romantic interest? Or
he had a few.
A few?
He has a couple, yeah.
Really? Is it worth me going back to check that out?
I think so, but I could be biased. I'm a huge fan, so right. I could watch it forever.
All right. Is there anything else that you want to bring up? Is there anything else you want to say you want the people to know about you? Your Irishness, perhaps?
Can't they tell?
How the fuck do you drink Guinness? God, it's horrible.
Oh, man. You know what a 7-course meal in Ireland is?
I think I've heard this, but I don't remember.
A 6-pack of Guinness and a potato.
It's like drinking motor oil, dude.
No,
how do you do it?
No, it's good for you. It's high in iron. It's wonderful, man.
Against me, I have a song called Pints of Guinness Make You Strong.
It's true to the Irish, too. It's like spinach to Popeye.
And we were talking about football, soccer, if you will, because that Euro thing is going on. I know nothing about soccer, and
Ireland,
I asked you if Ireland was in the Euro, and you looked at me like I had a third eye growing out of my forehead.
Because Ireland, it's a sore spot. I don't think Ireland's ever made the Euro Cup. I don't know why.
Is soccer like super huge like it is in other places over there?
In Ireland? Oh, yeah. More so rugby, too. Rugby's huge in Ireland. But soccer, yeah, football, as they call it. Yeah, it's pretty big.
Best Irish wrestler in history.
Ooh. Bob Backlund.
Is Bob Backlund Irish?
That's why he's got the red hair, man.
Oh.
That's because Vince, back then, Vince Sr. was very ethnic oriented.
Yeah, like Bruno
had the
and
Italians.
Yeah.
Bob Backlund was for the Irish.
Pedro Morales.
That's why Hulk Hogan
like
got his name, too, and he wanted Hogan
to dye
his
hair
red.
Yeah, that's right. What about Fit Finlay?
I like Fit Finlay.
I did an interview with Lance Storm a zillion years ago when I was first kind of getting into more involved in doing things in wrestling. This is before I got with PWA. I was doing something kind of similar to this, and he said that he loved Fit Finlay so much he'd work him for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he sung the praises of Fit Finlay big time.
And you know what? I'm going to change my answer.
Okay.
Pat O'Connor?
He's Irish? I'm kidding.
And isn't that where the O'Connor rule comes from?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure.
I wouldn't argue with you.
You know who would know? Either Michael or TJ.
Yeah.
Or Ross Hart, because that guy's like an encyclopedia, too.
Ross Hart is a nice guy. He always talks to me like he knows me, which I think is really sweet of him.
Yeah, but he's been coming over to shows for like 20 years.
But I always feel like nobody knows who I am. Because I've been with PWA for 20 years, but I've been very much in the background. And I never had a click.
You used to manage, though.
But not for... That was A, that
remember,
was 20 years ago, and
when
B, that was...
asshole Tex Gaines lost the match and you had to wear a dress for like a month?
No, it wasn't... That's not what it was. You're revising your history. What it was...
I just remember you wearing a dress.
It was Fright Night.
Okay.
And I was banned from ringside unless I let Kurt pick my Halloween costume.
Oh,
and that's why I wore the dress. And that was the night that Tex Gaines bladed me.
And dude, that's a no-no.
It was, well, you know, you're young and dumb and want to do fun shit, and I'm stupid, and I still kind of am stupid. But I'll never forget it, because I didn't realize at the time, be smart and take an aspirin or have a Red Bull or something to thin your blood out. So did the thing on the floor, and Juggernaut cracks me over the head, and I go down, and Ivan's down there, or Tex Gaines is down there. And he cuts me, and he's like, squeeze the blood out. And I squeeze the blood out, and nothing's happening. I'll never forget it as long as he looks me in the eye, and he goes, I'm so sorry, Boris. And he jams the blade and turns it. And, yeah, nothing. And there's pictures of it. I've got pictures of it. And it's this little tiny trickle of blood. And I look at it, and I'm like, God damn it.
I have pictures of Sheik's head. Remember when Andy went to hit him with the briefcase?
Oh, yeah.
Kicked Andy in the gut.
Yeah.
And Andy threw it up.
Yeah.
And caught Sheik right back in the head. I had pictures of that. Yeah. That was nasty. Good old Sheik.
Did you referee the death match, the clandestine death match?
I did not.
No?
I chose not
to. Did you just for personal reasons?
Yeah. You know what? Like that stuff has a place. I guess it's an art.
It's very polarizing.
Form. But to me, I couldn't. And especially, like, I have a soft spot for Sheik because him and I were friends before wrestling.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm the one who got him into PWA and wrestling.
And I love Sheik. One of the best guys.
Yes.
He makes me laugh constantly.
I love him.
He's just a lovable goofball.
Yeah. So that's the other thing is I couldn't sit there and watch my friend go.
And I'm a deathmatch fan, and I've watched a lot of them, and it is very, very different watching your friends do it. But yeah. It was a fun match to commentate, I'll tell you that much.
And Carrot's just awesome anyway, too. Love
yeah.
I miss that guy, too. But anyway, one of my favorite moments in PWA history was watching Sheik get told off and bitch slapped by the Iron Sheik.
By Iron Sheik, yep. Awesome.
And I think the reason it was so important, like such a big thing for me, was because I knew how important it was to him to be able to do that with him in front of a crowd. And then the crowd reaction for it too. I was so proud at that. I was just like so happy to see that. I thought it was the coolest thing.
Anything else you want to say? You want people to know?
No, man. I think we covered just about everything, didn't we?
We have rounded you out as a man, as a person.
Maybe a part two down the road.
Hey, anytime, man.
Because we didn't even talk about Cody Rhodes yet or...
Well, there's always a part two. Ember B wants to do a part two as well.
And
I want Pabst Blue Ribbon to sponsor me. I want to be the official podcast of Pabst Blue Ribbon. That's what I want.
That'd be all right. I don't mind a PBR every now and then. One of the other things was a favorite match of mine would be Marky versus AJ Styles.
Yeah, that was a banger. And just knowing what went into that, because Marky was so nervous that he used to come to my house all the time because I have the DVD collection, and he would study. I'd pull out TNA DVDs and whatever and put them in, and he'd watch.
That's awesome.
Study.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah.
He was nervous. But
he was nervous as fuck, and he'd come over a bunch of times, and we would study.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a cool
and it went, and he was so happy that it went well, and that's super cool. All right, we are going to go out to brand new music from Drug Church. Great band. If you like cool, riffy, crunchy guitar sound, really, really cool band. They have a brand new EP out called Tawny. I don't know if it's named after Tawny Katane, who recently just passed away. You know Tawny Katane?
No.
Remember the video for Here I Go Again by Whitesnake?
Yeah.
The girl dancing around on the cars?
Oh.
That's Tawny Katane. Yeah, okay. She passed away recently. Apparently she dated David Coverdale, the Whitesnake guy, for a while. I don't know. There's a whole thing there.
All right.
Anyway, great band if you like that kind of crunchy guitar sound. This is a song called Tawny from their EP Tawny by Drug Church. Next week's going to be special. We're going to have a little bit of a mini SatPod reunion. Scotty is going to join me, and we're going to rehash old SatPod times. You probably have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, but that's okay.
Was that the old man that yells at cloud stuff?
No.
Oh.
Different.
Okay.
That was my college radio show that I had a lot of fun doing. Thank you for listening. Mr. Fitzpatrick, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
And we will talk to y'all next week.